Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Let's return now to that idea of the father-son talk that the Carrs shared with us at the top of the hour. An African-American dad cluing his son in on what he considers to be the racial realities of American life, including the dangers that might lurk in encounters with police. Well, how does that talk change if the son is black but the father is a cop and white, and in this case, gay? Captain Kevin Fisher Paulson is with the San Francisco Sheriff's Department. He and his adopted son, 11-year-old Zane, know all about the talk.
There was an issue last year with a 13-year-old boy named Andy Lopez who was shot by a police officer in Santa Rosa, and he was carrying a toy gun at the time. And my son Zane sat at the kitchen table as we were listening on the radio about it, and he started crying. And I said, "Zane, why are you crying?" And he said, "Could that happen to me?" And it began the discussion with him about police officers and race. And the situation in Ferguson brought up the issue again about police officers and race, because we like to think we live in a post-racial society. I am the white father of a black child and a mixed race child, and I'd like to think that those issues don't matter anymore. But I had to be honest with him in that sometimes in the world, there are still people who will profile an 11-year-old boy simply based on his race. That's the hardest part, that an innocent 11-year-old boy could be looked on as a threat.
Did your adoption of Zane, in some sense, pull you out of a bubble in that you never really had thought about this much until it became clear just how in danger Zane might be at some point?
It was a moment of strange cultural awareness. I grew up in the pretty insular, white, Irish Catholic family, and I didn't understand the magnitude of the problems that a black man could face in this society until my children moved into the home. We took my sons to Maine, which is where my husband is from, and the family was all trying to be nice to us, but one of his relatives said, "Oh my gosh, look how big his lips stick out." And I thought, wow, she's trying to be nice, but she doesn't realize how offensive a remark like that could be. And we've been to baseball games, movie theaters, visiting people in other states where my 11-year-old son was looked on as being suspect if he walked around by himself in a store. So, yes, raising a black child has certainly awoken my awareness of race in America.
Thinking about the incident in Ferguson and using your perspective as a cop, what do you think broke down?
I think none of us know all the facts to the case right now, and I want to emphasize that I don't know all the facts. But I will say that the problem started a long time before that incident. What happened there was tragic. But looking at the fact that it was mainly an African-American community and there were mainly white police officers was the first step of there not being room for communication. That communication's got to come from a cultural competence, and the cultural competence comes from diversity. So the very first thing was there should have been recruitment for more minorities in their police officer agency. Having said that, there was no true and meaningful dialogue with the community about it. They were circling the wagons and they were protecting themselves. And then rather than begin a community dialogue, they began driving around in Humvees. And had there been a meaningful dialogue in the beginning, we wouldn't have gotten to the point where there were that many protests. A community does not protest if they feel like they're being heard. The path out of this is both the police and the community learning how to speak with each other. And that involves townhouse meetings, community meetings, and raising awareness of the needs of different groups.
You know, what if, no matter what you do, no matter how many talks you have with your son, Zane, he sees all these slights and people looking at him and notes these points at which he can be in harm's way because he's black and accumulates an anger and becomes a young man and has a anger towards the cops that you can't do anything about, how fearful will you be if that's his future?
I can't say I live without fear, and I can say the only answer is the kitchen table. We sit at the kitchen table every night, and every night we have dinner together. And I've seen anger in Zane. When Zane is feeling most frightened and most vulnerable, I'll give you a quick example. One day when I didn't buy him a sweatshirt that he wanted when we were at the baseball stadium, he started running. And when I finally caught up with him, he yelled loudly, as loud as he could, "Don't let this man stop me. He's not my real father. My real father is black." And of course, within 10 seconds, there were three police officers surrounding me. And I realized at the time that when Zane is most fearful, Zane feels that he is the most different. And being a straight black son of a white gay man, being a non-peace officer son of a peace officer, he will always go to his place of fear when he feels he's different. So I say we go back to the kitchen table and remind each other every night that we sit at the same kitchen table. We talk about the same issues every day. And we may be different. He may be tall, I may be short, he may be thin, I may be thick. But we are ultimately the same family. I have to live in that hope, and that my son can be a leader of that hope in the future.
Kevin, I just have to think that down deep inside of you, you must really fear that that anger is going to go off someday, sometime, and you're not going to be there to protect him.
I do worry about that. It's the tough role for any parent, not just an adoptive parent. But the tough thing is, how can I keep my child protected when I'm not there to protect him? Especially when my child is more at risk than the average child. And I don't have an easy answer for that. I wish I did. And that's one of the things that keeps me up at 2 in the morning. How can I keep him safe? And now that he's 11 years old and pretty tall for his age, pretty strong, I worry. But I can't live in fear. And so he and I go on doing the best we can. And the only way that you can spite hopelessness is to reach out for hope. So that's what we do.
Kevin Fisher-Paulson, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for talking to me today. I really appreciate it.